Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Hi, this is Ben Domenech, the host of the Federalist Radio Hour. We're a daily show coming to you 5 days a week from Washington, D.C., where we interview our nation's top journalists, politicians, authors, chefs, economists, entertainers, and more. If you're looking for a contrarian discussion on news, politics, or culture, give us a listen and subscribe at PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or at Apple Podcasts.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on, man. Get on. Welcome to the best hour in the universe, man. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus over there. Always great to see Mark.
Good to see you, too. Is this our special Christmas edition?
It's our holiday edition.
A holiday.
Yeah.
Well, mm-hmm. We say
on the eve of Christmas Eve.
This is on the eve of Christmas Eve. Well, okay. There you go. Yeah, I love the holidays for a multitude of reasons. One is I don't like hot weather. And this year has
been unseasonably
insanely
hot.
Right? And I find myself walking Phil around the neighborhood, and Phil is all black. He just absorbs the heat. He's 115 pounds, and at a certain point, what he does when I'm walking is he stops. And I tell everyone, you know, they go, well, how do you get him going again? And I go, it's like when your phone overheats when you leave it on the dashboard of your car. There's nothing you can say to it.
Right.
It has to cool to a certain degree, and then when it does, then it shall be usable. Phil's that way when he sprawls out on someone's wet lawn. He's there
and he's
until
done.
His core gets to whatever it has to get to. And that could be 25 minutes. That's usually when I see your wife.
Yeah, that's right.
When I'm
Paulette
sitting around waiting for Phil's core to get down.
To decompress.
Yes, that's where Paulette comes around the corner. And thankfully, we while away the hours looking at pictures of tile and money.
Right, and money you're going to spend of mine. Thank
yes.
you. Appreciate that.
Yes.
Much
so
we so are, we left as a cliffhanger from last episode. Gary, what's this guy's name again? This judicial Article 3 judicial nominee?
Matthew Spencer Peterson.
Who is, what, spent 7 years at the
FEC, I believe.
Federal Election Commission. And being questioned by John Kennedy, Senator, Louisiana?
He is Senator Kennedy. Let me check on his first name.
Doesn't matter. Let's go Kennedy and Peterson, right?
Kennedy, Peterson. Exactly.
Yeah. And now, last week, people are telling me, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. I assume everything is sort of partisan politics these days, so I don't pay much attention to anything anymore, which, boy, this guy really didn't know. And it's usually just depending on what side is saying that, whether you should listen or not. What I'm saying is the climate that we're living in has it's sort of like this. Let me give you a sad example. There should be a class action lawsuit filed by Mark Garagus against the mayor and the city planners and the city council of Los Angeles for this very reason. The traffic is so goddamn bad in the city now that I'm basing many of my decisions on traffic as being the most important aspect of this decision. They had the Podcast One company party in like Redondo Beach last night.
And you had to be on the boat by 5:15 or
right.
You're out,
and,
right?
And I just looked at Matt and I said, weighs it. And he's like, hour, 20 minutes. I was like, each way. I can't do it. I'm working all day. I can't do that.
I know.
I did that. Then the next day, that same day, I actually get a call. And, Ben Mankiewicz, who used to do At the Movies, you know him, he's a nice guy. He's now doing the Sports Illustrated thing, and they're getting together this round table to talk about boxing movies, and I want to include you in the Sports Illustrated box. Where is it? It's on Santa Monica or whatever. I can't. I can't do it.
I just won't go. I'm anti-West Side, too, for that very reason.
It's Tuesday. He wants to do it. They're doing it. They could do it at 4 o'clock. I can't do it.
Never in a million years.
I can't do it. And I just realized I like Ben. I like talking sports. I like Christmas parties. I like the harbor. I like the boats. I like Norm Paz. I'm not going.
Yeah.
And now You've achieved your goal, Los Angeles. I may never leave the house again because it's so brutal that it has to factor into every conversation. It's like the part where this guy wants me to do his Sports Illustrated show about boxing, neither here nor there. Yep. Big question. Where is it? And that's the biggest thing. And if it's on the other side of the hill, that's a major deal. And it's the difference. Now, look, if it's come on out and do the show, we'll give you $50,000, then I say fine.
You'll but be if there it's in
just,
a heartbeat.
If they go, just join us, no thanks, but no thanks.
Exactly. So, and I don't even understand. Well, I understand it works in reverse because people on the west side, they won't go past La Cienega.
Right. So I don't know what we can do, but as it.
We can do our theory. We'll kick Garcetti upstairs, let him run for president, because mm-hmm. he'll do less harm there right. than here.
I said, I want a traffic czar. Can somebody be a traffic czar?
Right.
Can we have somebody in Los Angeles? We're going to have a pot czar coming out.
Right.
Can we have a traffic czar? Can we have someone in charge of traffic? Yes.
Oh, I was just trying to signal you. I have your list if you want to run down with Mark what happens when you Google.
Oh, yeah. I did this on my podcast. I Googled, I just sat home and somebody tweeted me, you guys now have elected a pot czar in Los Angeles.
I don't think we
elected.
Where's
your traffic czar? I don't know. Phil's trying to get in here. Is something scrapping at something? I hear a weird scraping.
I don't know
noise.
What's going on. Phil's at the front door.
Oh, okay.
Is that it?
All right. So I type in traffic. I just Google in traffic czar LA just to see if I can yell at this person. Does this person exist? And the stuff that comes up.
LA leaders okay cannabis czar, then meet the city of Irvine's new traffic czar. Irvine wants to reinstate traffic commission. Montreal's new traffic czar.
Wait, Irvine's got one.
Yep, Montreal's got one. Then cannabis czar. Traffic czar was fired over harassment complaint in Montreal.
Oh, they me too'd him.
Yeah.
He got me too'd. Yeah. Me too'd means no due process. That's what it now means.
Well, let's talk about that first. Anyway, point is this. No traffic czar in Los Angeles. Montreal
right. yeah,
has
oh,
a
yeah,
saga
right.
going on over there. With the traffic
Irvine
czar.
Needs a traffic czar.
Right, but not L.A.
But not L.A.
But exactly. We got a pot czar.
Because are we going to get started on this? Because I'll just go on a rant for forever. We've got a pot czar. As we're spending money in the city attorney's office prosecuting people for having cannabis licenses that they've had for years and have been operating and paying taxes, and we've got prosecutors who are prosecuting them criminally. Yet we've got a pot czar. Why doesn't the pot czar grant immunity and have those city attorneys stop driving out to East L.A.? That's the first way to solve some of the traffic.
I never know why we don't do anything that doesn't just make sense. I can never figure that one out.
You should see the looks on these prosecutors' faces when I just ask them. I mean, seriously, this is what you went to law school. You became a lawyer. You're working for the city attorney. Presumably, you've got an idealistic bone in your body, and yet you're camped out here telling people who are selling pot. And they're trying to comply. They're doing all, they're jumping through all these hoops that they make you jump through. And trust me, it's not easy. You have to go through all of the compliance of the LA Municipal Code. You got to have this tax certificate and that tax certificate. And you got to have a red certificate. And you got to have the other compliance things. And yet they're trying to criminally prosecute these people. And they even criminally prosecute the employees. And you have to prove, the onus is on you to prove that they're an employee to try to get them out of the thing. And it's just a colossal waste of time and money. Colossal. And we just, it's just, and they look at you like with a blank face. Like, what do you mean?
This thing where people just go, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
I'm always like,
why?
Why? Yeah. Why are we doing that? We had a, Mark and I had a, it's a best of ACS here, but Mark and I are pitching a show out there. I was in CBS last week, and it's like 3 p.m. They had that Starbucks coffee pots, you know, and I was like, oh, the big thermos with the squeeze right. top thing. And I was like, oh, got some coffee. Good. And I start heading over there, and people are like, don't go over there. I'm like, why not? And I, of course, the regular one is empty, and the decaf one hasn't been touched, and they put them out at 8 a.m.
Right.
And I know the following morning, that's the way they're going to lay them out again. One regular, gone by noon. No. One decaf, never touched. The guy at night has to dump it all down the drain every time. And I know I could go, Why are you doing it that way? He could go, this is the way we do it.
Yeah.
That's
the same mentality. In fact, there's a variation on it where a prosecutor will say, well, that's the way we've always done it. I said, well, right. I say, you went to law school, right? Yeah. Okay. You know what stare decisis is. You know what case law is. You know what a statute is, right? Okay. I'm telling you that this isn't permitted by statute. I'm telling you that this is infirm under the case law. And they'll just the response. Well, yeah, but it's the way we've always done it. I said, really? Was that a right answer in law school? Because I must have missed a class that said this is the way we've always done it.
It's the way building inspectors work too.
Yeah.
Where's your breather? I don't need one. We've always had breathers.
Yeah.
Well, this one doesn't need one. Right. Well, but you better get one.
Yeah. Can you show me in the code where
it's only it? The thing about if you're in the automotive manufacturing business and that's your mindset, then you're out.
Yeah,
you go out of business.
If you're anything, if you're in business where you have to deal with somebody buying your product. Johnny Cochran used to say this about Marcia Clark, and I love Marcia. But Marcia used to say, I could never do what you do, Johnny. I'd never do what you do. And Johnny said, yeah, you're right, because no client would hire you. And that was kind of like, you know, something to say. You know, it's like prosecutors will say that to defense lawyers all the time. Oh, you're out there making a fortune, blah, blah, blah. I can't do that. I couldn't defend people. And you say, yeah, you couldn't because you could never make a living. I mean, you'd be bankrupt in God knows how long because you just have the antithesis of having any kind of curiosity or wanting to practice or hone your craft. And mind you, not all prosecutors. There are some. In fact, one pulled me aside recently and said, would you and Adam stop being so hard on prosecutors? I said, Adam's a former federal prosecutor. He's not going to be hard on himself.
Well, we better not bring that shit into my court. All right. So
speaking of bringing your stuff into his court, can we, Gary, play a minute of this? Because this is just astonishing to me.
Yeah, absolutely. We will play it right now. Here we go.
Have any of you not tried a case to verdict in a courtroom? Mr. Pitch, have you ever tried a jury trial?
I have not.
Civil?
No.
Criminal?
No.
Bench?
No.
State or federal court?
I have not.
Okay. Have you ever taken a deposition?
I was involved in taking depositions when I was associate at Wiley Ryan when I first came out of law school. But that was...
Have you ever, how many depositions?
I would, I'd be struggling to remember.
Less than 10?
Yes.
Less than 5?
Probably somewhere in that range.
Have you ever tried taking a deposition by yourself?
I believe no.
Okay. Have you ever argued a motion in state court?
Hold on a second.
I have not.
Yeah. Okay. You got to hold it for a second. You struggle to remember how many prostitutes you've had sex with over the years when you were an alcoholic.
You struggle to remember how many times.
Because it was every weekend, and you were drunk every weekend, and that was over a 27-year naval career.
Right.
When you're stationed
when
in
you're
Philippines.
The rear admiral. Yeah.
Yeah, but when you've done two or three, you don't have to struggle.
You would probably know the names of the litigants of the deposition and what and the location. By the way, Gary, so far, every question he's answered, you could have answered the same.
Oh, absolutely.
Every single one.
Now, what is he attempting to be here?
This is to be not just a state court judge, not a traffic court judge. This guy is to be a Article III lifetime appointment to the district court.
And what presumably is he or was he doing? He's a judge now, right?
He's apparently adjudicates because they've got an honorable in front of him. Adjudicates FEC matters, Federal Election Commission matters. Is that right? FEC.
How do you make it to the honorable? How do you get the honorable in front of your name if you have never been inside a courtroom?
I've got two kids. One's a lawyer, Tenny. The other, Jake, is a chef. As of right now, Tenny has tried two cases, has actually been to depositions, and has argued motions in court, and she's been a lawyer for 8 months. Okay, so she's got four times as much experience. Jake, however, who is not a lawyer, never went to law school and is a chef, already beats this guy because I've taken Jake to depositions. I've taken Jake to jails to do depositions or Rule 15 hearings. I've taken Jake to mediations. Jake the chef is more qualified at this point unless something happens in the next part of this tape.
All right, go ahead. Sorry, Gary.
Have you ever argued a motion in federal court?
No.
That was where we ended up clipping it, but
there was another thing.
Feel free to watch the whole thing.
He asked him, "Do you know what a motion in limine is?" And okay, I mean that's first year law school. A motion in limine is a motion you file before trial to keep some piece of evidence out. And they asked this guy, "When was the last time you read the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure?" I don't think I have. How about Federal Rules of Evidence? I don't think I have. Do you know what a motion in limine is? No. My son, the chef, is more qualified for the district court than this guy. I don't even understand why this guy wants to put himself in this position.
I would argue the average Law and Order viewer is more qualified than this guy.
I would argue that anybody who's watched My Cousin Vinny is more qualified than this guy.
Hold on. I don't know why, but this just brought me here. Does Bobby Flay have a daughter, and if so, is her name Sue?
Sophie.
Damn, I was close. You dropped the ball with Souffle. Oh my God, did he? Oh, what an idiot.
How did he not think of that?
Go Susan if you're going with an S name, anyways?
Sophie Flay, Souffle. Come on, man. I met, and you want a way deeper cut than this? When I was at the Acme Theater, I met the heir to the Lear jet fortune.
Really?
Attractive blonde female. Someone's going to have to look this up. First name? Shanda.
Shanda Lear. Wow. Now that is so good.
I'd like to get
good.
Her in an elevator with Sophie Flay and go, wow. Did your parents either didn't love you or they dropped the ball, Souffle?
Wow. She was special, too, because you got Mary Louise, William Jr., Patty, John, David, Tina, and Shanda.
And Shanda.
Chandelier!
Yeah. I don't know. I kind of like that.
I like it, too. What's Bobby doing, man?
He's dropping the ball.
Wow.
Dropping the knife.
Souffle.
Mm. As long as, well, we're nominally a legal show, by grandfather, step-grandfather, whose last name, he used to, because his name was Arslanian, he never wanted to go by Arslanian. Nobody knew who it was, so he always called himself, you know, Al Lion. My name is Al Lion.
All right.
And we had a family, friends that we knew called the Denians. And so my father always said, Mark, your grandfather went by Al Lion. You should go by Al. Just go by Mark Lion. And then marry one of the Denian girls. And then have her go to law school, start a firm, and call it Lion and Denian. He could tell that joke 1,000 times, and he would never get old with him.
So when Trump appoints these guys, if Trump appoints these guys.
Right, Trump does. These are presidential appointees.
Obviously, he's not vetting these guys. Somebody's doing this, right?
You just have to say to yourself, is this some kind of giant fuck you to the judiciary? I'm just going to appoint guys who have absolutely. I mean, we've just decided we've reached the point where it doesn't matter.
Well, do you think Trump and or his guys, do they just go, hey, this guy's a Republican. He voted for you. Whatever. He's for the wall. Just go ahead and shove him in there.
Yeah.
There must be some sort of criteria that obviously doesn't involve history or experience or knowledge.
Well, the thing that is particularly irksome is Trump knew enough, you'll remember during the campaign, to put out a list of names for the Supreme Court, which is not what this is the district court. From the district court, there's a circuit court, Ninth Circuit, Second Circuit, 11th Circuit. Then you have the Supreme Court. There's three levels. This is the major leagues. And the list of people that he said he was going to consider for the U.S. Supreme Court, he had his people vet it. I assume it was people connected to the Federalist Society, which is a conservative, has a conservative bent. And for whatever you disagree, they were generally well-respected jurists. But this is just incomprehensible to me. I can't tell you how many of these people he's nominated are rated unqualified by the American Bar Association. And that's a tough task, too, because that's, you know, the ABA is not exactly just telling everybody they're unqualified. But I mean, is there some basic floor or hurdle we can go over before somebody becomes a judge? I mean, can you imagine in your troll litigation, was that federal or state? Do you remember?
We tried to get a change of venue from Texas to California.
So it must have been federal. So what if this guy was your judge and just knew nothing? I mean, you just said, "Judge, I want to do a motion to eliminate." He says, I'll get back to me in a week. I'll find out what that is.
I'm,
judge,
couldn't imagine.
Judge, I want to appoint you to the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. I haven't read it, so let's just press pause.
What do you think, what's going on? So we talked at sort of the beginning. So I want to get into all of this stuff that's all over the news about everybody from, you know, Weinstein to Al Franken and all this kind of stuff. It's driving me nuts. I think Matt Damon got in trouble last week for putting a tweet out.
Yeah.
For basically just saying what I say, which is...
Which is, you know what? If you've been thinking about your home security, you know what he
says?
That's
what I tweet out.
Yeah, exactly. What I tweet out. Simply Safe. No better time to get it than right now. Right now. The holidays are particularly, you're particularly vulnerable. People looking for your presence. Simply Safe is the best protection, period. You put together a massive security arsenal. Starts with entry sensors, motion sensors, glass break, everything you need to stop criminals from touching your home, not only touching your home, but robbing your kiddies of their Christmas presents. And right now, for the holidays, get this, our blessed listeners get $200 off this complete protection package. No contracts, no commitments. All you got to do is go Simply Safe, SimpliSafe.com/Adam, ADAMTHREE 3. This is probably the best home security deal you'll ever see. That's SimpliSafe.com/Adam 3, not the number, spell it out, THREE, to save $200. SimpliSafe/Adam 3.
So, what's going on out there is lunacy. It's driving me nuts. We're in a very dangerous place now where rumblings come up of somebody and they just fire them because we don't want to hear anything about it.
Right.
And that is very dangerous territory because I'll just bring up Tavis Smiley's name and then PBS or NPR or whatever just go, we're fine, done. Get rid of him.
Right.
And it's like, you don't want to hear what he did?
No. No,
didn't do?
Well, how about if you comment on it, like you mentioned Matt Damon, the mere discussion then brings the parade of brickbats at you. Because all Matt Damon said, which is, by the way, demonstrably true.
Do you have the tweet, Gary? Or you'll find it. Or was it via tweet? I don't know.
I'm sorry.
I thought he was getting. I think Matt he was Damon getting is, interviewed.
I don't think it was a tweet. Oh. I think it was an interview. But the reason that was stuck in your head is I said you will be seeing a lot of tweets because our fans are tweeting us the story.
Yeah,
it's,
sorry.
All he said, which is, I don't care who you are, you have to say yes. He's got a point. He's saying you can't conflate Al Franken with Harvey Weinstein. So for people who listen to this show who are a cut above, this would be the same way as saying that somebody who commits first-degree murder is the same as somebody who's guilty of involuntary manslaughter. First of all, we've got a whole jurisprudence that is based on the idea that there are distinctions of your actions. Not all actions are the same. Just because you get in your car and you commit a DUI, is that different than if you get in your car and then kill somebody while you're on your DUI? Should those people be punished the same?
I feel like there's an even greater chasm because in involuntary manslaughter and murder one, there's at least a corpse in both scenarios.
Right.
I don't know that there's a corpse in the Al Franken scenario. You may have broken the law, but it could be jaywalking. Like, yeah. I don't know where the corpse is. So there's a whole bunch of things. First off, we started going down this road where people said, look, if I feel like I'm victimized, then I am, in fact, a victim, which is a very dangerous way of reverse engineering the law.
Right.
Which is, You go, I passed you on the sidewalk, our shoulders briefly brushed, and I feel like you assaulted me. Yeah. And then somebody goes, but he didn't assault you. And then someone goes, shh, if that's the way they feel, then that's their truth. So now we're reverse engineering this, which is, so you feel like you were assaulted? I do. Okay. Well, now we have to find who assaulted you.
Right.
Now, that's an interesting, easy math to do, except for the part where you weren't assaulted. But if you feel assaulted, we can't take that away from you. If you feel like you're victimized, then you must be a victim, and then there must be a victimizer.
Yeah.
So you feel like you're a victim, right? Right? That's your truth. You're living your truth. Fine. Now we'll just do whatever the next step is, which is who victimized you? That guy. Okay, let's go after him. I'd like to get back to the part where you're a victim.
Yeah, but we skip over that. Plus, the due process part is also, that goes hand in hand. We've now eliminated with this idea. I mean, there's also 200 years. In fact, the trend of the law by no less than Antoine Scalia was the case called Crawford, which is you get the Sixth Amendment. Not only is a right to counsel, but it's a right to confront and cross-examine.
Hold on, I've been waiting to do this. Antonin Scalia, yes. Antoine.
Yes.
Sorry.
You know, my law background. I know you've done this.
You've done this.
Your homework.
That's my background. Sorry.
I'll call him Justice.
Justice Scalia. Yes.
So he's the one who's pioneered Crawford and its progeny that are you can't just get into hearsay. You just can't throw something out there and make it stick, basically. You've got to be able to confront and cross-examine your accuser or the person who is testifying from you, and we're dispensing with that. I mean, people are making decisions, losing their careers, just based on somebody saying, yeah, this is what I perceived, and therefore, boom, you're done. All it takes, and it's a mob mentality, because
why is there not more, especially here in Hollywood, in California, Billy Bush, why is there not more wrongful termination lawsuits? I mean, if I'm Billy Bush or perhaps Al Franken, although that's a way deeper political thing. I mean, he stepped down, but he stepped down for – there was a strategy to Al Franken. Oh,
well, there was absolutely a strategy to Al Franken because they had a Democratic governor. They knew the Democratic governor was going to appoint the Democratic lieutenant governor.
It's not a hero strategy, but there's a whole – you work for NFL Network, and there's a 5-year, and you're Marshall Faulk and whoever, and you're all just gone.
Yeah.
Some hairdresser spoke up. Now everyone's gone. Is there not going to be lawsuits?
And can't you send sex toys anymore? What has come to America
insane.
When you can't just send sex toys?
Can't Billy Bush sue somebody? Can't he go, this is a wrongful termination case?
The PR strategy, which has been adopted at least on the left, is to embrace it, apologize, say I didn't realize at the time, and blah, 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 and then go into hiding until the next guy gets taken down. Today it was a woman.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Gary, who's the... There was a woman lawmaker or candidate or something who went down today. But it's just get 5 or 6 people together, boom, they're gone.
That's wow.
It. No due process, no confront your accuser.
Well, here's another problem. I like to yell at Dr. Drew about this too.
What is Drew's position on this?
Wheelbarrow.
Really?
Her name was...
The first cowgirl. I just want to see if I can give an offensive answer.
Her name is Andrea Ramsey. I'm reading into her story now.
Okay.
So I yell at Drew all the time. Not specifically about this, but he'll go, what's going on with these witch hunts and everyone accusing everybody of everything and everybody, you know, this world this we're getting into? And I go, I blame you. And he says, why do you blame me? And I said, because I've been sitting next to you for 15 years, and I've been the one going, I'm rich. That doesn't make me the enemy. It means I pay your goddamn taxes. So stop bitching at me. And I totally reject your cries of racism or misogyny or what. I'm not going to apologize for jokes. Go after yourself. I'm a comedian. And Drew has been sitting there. And he basically takes a half step back every time. Like, look, if people are upset, then I apologize for upsetting people. I understand. And I said, your half step back just makes 2 steps forward for these asswipes. They don't know. They're not. They don't know. There is no stop, go back to your house. It's a constant forward motion. They're douchebag sharks who just swim forward. That's their life.
Right.
And they don't care if you apologize or step forward to do anything. Billy Bush, you apologize as much as you want. We're going to spit you up and chew you out. The only thing that could have prevented this, I was just in here earlier before you came in. I did a take a knee with a guy named Tim Miller. Tim Miller, nice guy. He was a strategist.
Very nice guy.
And he worked for the Mitt Romney campaign. And I'm like, he had a dossier filled with women or something. You know, the idea that Mitt Romney married the first woman he's ever kissed, so he's not getting Mark's vote. Still married to her, so that's done with me and Mark. But this squeaky clean,
right, with
Mormon,
not a skeleton anywhere.
That he spoke. I don't even say he misspoke. He just said, "What do you mean hiring women? I have a dossier filled with women,
right,
saying
binders
qualified
full of women.
Binders filled with women." And the idea that we're able to take this, whip it around, put in some retarded Cuisinart, pour a bunch of retarded flour in it, and have some retarded bundt cake come out, and then he would have to eat it in front of us while he was apologizing? That's insane. He should have went, are you stupid? You want to talk about offensive to women? This, what you're doing right now, I will not take one step on this journey with you about me being misogynist because I said I had binders filled with women.
It shows you how the world has changed because what was that, 2012? We're now almost in 2018, 6 years. He also said the greatest threat, remember this, to the U.S.?
Yeah.
And mind you, I'm not a Mitt Romney voter. I didn't vote for Mitt. I had no patience for him, whatever. He called it early. He said Russia.
Right.
He said
and
Russia.
Everybody laughed
him off the stage is an understatement. He was mocked.
I'm just saying that what will prevent all of this, and when he's talking about 47% aren't voting for him or whatever, instead of trying to walk it back, you go, yeah, I'm talking to you, bitch. I'm talking about the 47% of people who don't pay any goddamn taxes and aren't going to vote for me. They're going to vote for you because you're going to get them more shit. And by the time you're done, there'll be 53% of the people. And it'll be 70% by the time your predecessor's out of office. So, yes, that is you. And, yes, I stand by it. And, yes,
and
I'm talking about that.
I like I have said before, I don't understand it. It is the PR strategy du jour, even where you read every one of those statements, they have the same elements. I don't remember the incident, but I have acted horribly. I apologize if you perceived it differently than I perceived it. I'm now going to go seek therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I'll reappear, 6 months from now. And blah,
I want
blah,
to,
blah.
If I'm the attorney, if I'm Glory Allred, I'm asking these guys, you don't recall the incident. Fine. Let's get a polygraph. We'll get you hooked up. And the first question I'm going to have for you is, when's the last time you beat off to this incident you don't recall? I'll bet it was within the last 4 days, in which case maybe you do recall it.
And if you do recall, own it.
Yep. All right. Gary's got the latest. This is the female.
Yeah. Andrea Ramsey was a Democratic congressional candidate running in Kansas, and she was forced to drop out. It's seemingly by the DCCC. She criticized them on her way out when she was announcing this. It appears that charges were brought against her by a gentleman named Gary Funkhauser. So I inherently don't believe him.
I was going to say, seriously?
Yeah.
There's got to be a practical joke.
Wait.
Yeah.
That's
the name for Curb
Your
Enthusiasm.
Curb Your Enthusiasm, right?
Yes. Apparently, she used to be this gentleman's superior at a company, and he filed a lawsuit against the company and named her as one of his harassers or whatever, and they settled with him. So someone came out and said, look, you must have done this. You settled. You were named. And her thing was, I wasn't named personally. It was against the company. The company decided to settle. If it had been me, I would have fought it. And why are you guys just kowtowing to anything that someone points to from 2005 that is a zero?
Because due process has been eliminated.
This is definitely going to result in less women getting hired. Because who would want to risk this.
Yeah, the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah, as a boss, I got to think twice about hiring a woman, because even if I'm coached up, what if Matt Fondelier, the porcelain punisher, has a few too many IPAs at the Christmas party and drags her into his office, a.k.a. the bathroom.
Right.
As he is wont to do.
As he's wont to do. That's what I'm saying. It's going to end up in that. It probably already has begun. It's the same thing about, hey, Black Lives Matter. Guess what? Cops aren't getting out of their cars anymore. They don't want to. Who wants to throw away their career talking to the 17-year-old black guy in the corner anymore? Like, who wants to risk it?
The thing about this is I just can't believe how quickly from 0 to 60 the accusation gets floated. All you've got to do is have some numbers and boom.
Well, the thing that's weird about the numbers for me, as I was discussing on, I don't think with you, but other podcasts, you know, we're talking about murder one and manslaughter and stuff like that. To me, this is like essentially saying, hey, but, you know, Adam Carolla, you broke the law. And I go, what? What did I do? Well, you were speeding on your way back to La Cañada. It's at 55 and you're going 71. Well, okay. And then they go, and guess what? We have other instances of you breaking the law. It's like, what? Four-way stop sign. Mm-hmm. You didn't come to a complete stop. All right. So what else? Other speeding incidents have now come forward. Right. You're driving to Irvine. You guys were coming back from the show, and Mike was driving 80 miles an hour, and you were in the car.
Yep.
And it's like, all right.
You tolerated it.
You can keep coming forward with as many of these as you want. We haven't gotten to a crime
right
yet. And like with Al Franken, it was a whole bag of nothing. And it's like another accuser has come forward. Another accuser accuse him of what?
How about when Arianna Huffington's picture where he was coming out and they were doing whatever
right,
else.
Right.
And that dominated the news for like 18 hours until Arianna said, no, you don't understand. I've known him and his wife. We were joking. It was joking. And they said, oh, okay, let's move on to the next one. And then it became truth. Didn't matter. It was even though she denies it, it doesn't matter because we say that it did happen. So that even takes it a step farther than your theory. It's whether a third party thinks it was victimization.
Well, I get what the news is doing. What the news, to me, I mean, in my estimation, the news has a sort of a Hippocratic oath that they've completely given up on. And, you have your fiduciary duties and they have their Hippocratic oath and it's out the window, which is, we got to get eyeballs. We got to get clicks. We got to move sponsorship, like whatever it is, whatever it's going to take. Cause the news used to kind of have to vet what was something and what's not something.
Used to be able to corroborate two sources and you had to have some kind of, and the corroboration had to be something that was a touchstone. And now, and this is part of citizen journalism, love it or leave it, now if you can find something somewhere and quote that, you can just build on that and then you're off to the races and it's just impossible. It's impossible to deal with.
I was also talking to Tim Miller about, it was funny because I was listening to my friend Dennis Prager on the morning radio. He's the sweetest, warmest, nicest, jovial, most jovial guy you know. And it's like his Wikipedia page is filled with junk about him being homophobic and racist and stuff like that. And he goes and fixes it and then it comes back. And
like a virus.
Yes. And this notion where in the New York Times, in the LA Times, he has statements attributed to him that aren't even in quotes. It's more just like, well, he didn't say it, but this is what he meant. And then they print it. And it's totally insane. And you go, this is journalism?
I'm telling you, we've entered.
Wikipedia, please do not confuse Wikipedia for journalism.
No, I don't. What I'm saying is the sad part is there should be a big chasm between the New York Times writing about Dennis Prager and Wikipedia, and the stuff they write about him on the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times is every bit as sort of misleading and erroneous as Wikipedia. And my feeling is like, are you a news organization or aren't you? Are you interested in the truth or are you not? And you are going to do what Fox did with NASCAR. Aha. It's a prime example. NASCAR was huge about 10 years ago. So NASCAR's always been around. And then NASCAR got huge. Remember that?
Yeah.
The early 2000s, whatever.
Brian France.
They got huge. And it's really been on the decline the last few years. Now, what happened? So what happened is this. In a nutshell. NASCAR got hot. And
this is going to be very interesting for me personally because I represented Jeremy Mayfield. And I cross-examined Brian France, who owns NASCAR.
Right.
And represented for a brief period of time his ex-wife as well. So I want to hear this theory. In fact, I just ran into him over the summer.
The theory is this. NASCAR had this huge resurgence. It got very popular in the 2003 or 5 or whatever. It got really big. 2005 is probably at its height. The big events were selling out, blah, blah, blah. And so Fox and NASCAR to some degree, but let's say Fox, they went, all right, let's do NASCAR Sundays. Let's do NASCAR Mondays. Let's do NASCAR Under the Lights on Thursdays. Let's have all the shows be NASCAR tonight. They just kept trading on NASCAR, NASCAR, NASCAR. We'll have the NASCAR Truck Series. We'll introduce that. We'll have to do everything. And eventually, they hitched every wagon they had to NASCAR, and NASCAR couldn't really support 10 shows. It could support a Sunday race, but it couldn't support then Monday night race. And that's what they – you get greedy, and you try to grab on. And what – the media outlets are doing now is they're getting drunk with this quick click bait stuff.
Exactly.
They're losing credibility. They're completely losing. And when people get numb to this and go away, they don't have anything to go back to anymore. They're so drunk with clickbait and calling everybody a racist and calling everybody a homophobe and, Donald Trump this and Donald Trump. They're so drunk with this and it's so lucrative and the grass is so green right now, but they're selling their soul because I don't think of the LA Times or the New York Times the way I used to think of them.
Well, I think I've had this argument, actually. We should have him on sometime. Harvey over at TMZ. Harvey Levin. And I've known Harvey since 4 incarnations ago when he was the guy who would put the microphone out when Judge Wapner was doing People's Court, and then he had Celebrity Justice, and then Celebrity Justice morphed into... Have you had him in?
If we have him on, can we ask him about his little law podcast?
Yeah.
I suspect was inspired by
exactly.
You two.
I call it Reasonable Doubt Light.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Not know it existed.
Yeah. I don't think it holds a candle to this, and obviously the listeners don't either. But the argument, and where I give Harvey credit, is he changed the exactly what you were talking about the sources, and he's a journalist in the sense that he runs down – he's got sources. He runs down stories. He tries to make the story accurate. I've yelled at him. He and I have yelled at each other so many times I can't even tell you over the years. Well, I'll scream at him and I'd say that's just a demonstrably false story. To his credit, as recently in the last 60 days, he's taken a story down after I went, postal on him. But the other news agencies and websites and newspapers, mind you, newspapers are now completely anachronistic. When you see somebody reading a newspaper, it's almost shocking. You still see it in the courthouse hallway where people pass it around, but almost everybody's on their smartphone or on a pad or something, and they're web surfing for their news, or they're doing Twitter or Instagram or something else. But the problem is that he realized that you can monetize it by a story with a headline that draws people in, what you call clickbaits. And then everybody races after him. When it's on TMZ, it spreads like wildfire. And then people tend to want to make it juicier and they don't source it. And it just becomes, it dumbs down the consumer. The consumer gets dumbed down, is I think your ultimate point. And I don't know how you kind of save that from a death spiral, because you would like to at some point have something that is not partisan-based but is at least attempts to. Maybe it's the pendulum swinging back, that at least attempts to ground whatever you're doing in some sort of testable reality so that you can say, instead of – don't you get tired when you read these things on the internet? Virtually every article I read now, I can tell virtually by the second paragraph what their viewpoint is because it's got some pejorative about one side or the other. Whoever it is that they're attacking, they throw in something that never 15 years ago would have been it would have been unacceptable. You couldn't put this word in there. You couldn't make fun of the person in this supposed journalistic thing. But we've gotten to the point where virtually everything is opinion.
Well, look, if you're going to tell the story about Ferguson and Michael Brown, you can say his age, you can say his name. You don't have to work in gentle giant.
Right. I mean, that is commentary. That's opinion.
You're making commentary. Right. We don't want commentary. We want to know. Look, you can say 6'7", 300 pounds. You can say he was a good student or something like that. But the gentle giant, like that is commentary that
and
you're adding
that
to
that. That used to be the whole idea of, I remember this.
And by the way, sorry, if you call somebody a gentle giant, if I just said, this guy's a gentle giant, and then I said, at some point, he confronted a cop, shots rang out, and he was dead. Well, then as the reader, you got to do the math.
Well, how about the video?
Would the
of him
gentle giant attack a cop? No, he said gentle but giant. But so I'll do the math. Yes, sorry, Gary.
How about the video of him menacing? I've never seen a gentle giant menace. I'm a large dude. You're not going to find a video of me menacing someone.
My problem with it is where were the editors? There used to be somebody who was an editor, and the editor would hold the reporter accountable for the language. That's why they called them an editor, so that you would not inject your perspective and try to be neutral.
When you write a book, one of the feathers in my cap is – and you know, when you write a book, it has to be vetted through the attorneys for the publisher.
Right.
Because if you said you nailed Leah Remini on a bus ride to Nevada many years ago, if in fact you did not have sex with Leah Remini on a bus ride to Nevada, Leah Remini is going to catch wind of this.
And she's going to sue your ass. Hopefully
let me
do it for her.
That's right. So you literally have to vet every one of these things. Otherwise, they don't let you put it in print.
They've got people that are called fact checkers that spend their whole day going over every single thing that's got an issue.
Use some of those folks to vet your story.
I'd just like to be able to go somewhere where that was done. I mean,
one of the questions when I wrote my sort of autobiography, not Taco Bell material, the first question from the lawyer from New York when I was on the phone talking to him was, are your parents litigious? Is that a great story? How much shit must I have been talking about my mom and my dad? I wish they knew what litigious meant. Maybe I would have got a Schwinn when I was a kid instead of a Huffy. No, they're not litigious. That's the problem.
Exactly. You wanted that.
You wanted a
little litigious chromosome.
Just a little dusting of letigy lets you know you're alive. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to be aggressively litigious, but yes, it does show you have a pulse.
I wanted to hear the words, I should sue this guy.
Right, just once. All right, let me tell you about someone you shouldn't sue. Tommy John, man.
Never.
The best. I got their underpants, their undershirts. I wear them. They stay tucked in. They work the undershorts. They go down, and they come up, and they're great if you're going to the gym. You're taking a nice long walk with your version of Philly cheesesteak. They never ride up. It's impossible to get a wedgie. Game-changing, horizontal, quick-draw flies. Innovative, never take a day off over at Tommy John. They just never stop innovating over there. Even during the holidays, they're hard at work in the lab right now, making their product even better, more comfortable for you. Over 500,000 men have upgraded to Tommy John. We all wear it here. It's just the best.
Gary and I like that. You're with me on this, right? The ones that are kind of long.
Yeah,
I was just gonna
try to jump in with that. The long sweats are really good, but what Ace is talking about in terms of the boxers, go for the boxer brief cut. It goes deeper down your thigh, stays in position.
Occasionally, we'll just slide up the leg from the bottom side and pull everything down and get it down. It's like cycling shorts. Great if you're going to the gym or taking a walk or doing anything. It's Tommy John, right, Gary?
That's right. Go to TommyJohn.com now to check out the complete line of Go Anywhere underwear, shirts, and socks. Use code Adam to save 20% on your first order. That's TommyJohn.com, code Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com, code Adam.
So the biggest problem to me is not the folks that are attempting to pay their bills with clickbait and all the accusations or false accusations, or it's not so much the false accusations, it's the non-accusation accusation, you know, or the county fair, he put my hand, his arm around me, touched my buttocks outside of my jeans without consent, you know, like the George Bush with his
David Copperfield
joke. Like, these are not. It's all the people who are simply taking the path of least resistance and saying, no, I agree. If somebody makes an allegation, then that's their truth, and then that's the reality, and they should never be questioned, and we should never ask the thing, and we should always believe them 100%. It's really easy for everyone to take that stance because it's the popular stance, and you'll never be questioned. The less popular stance is the one Matt Damon, well, first I took, and now Matt Damon, which is, I don't throw the word hero around that often, but yeah, everybody has to start piping up. And if everybody would pipe up in unison and say, famously, when I was filling in for Dennis Prager, and it was the day after Kathy Griffin showed the picture with Trump's head and the ketchup and everything, they ran in and they said to me, Barron Trump saw this. Barron Trump has been traumatized. That's what we're going to start the next segment with. And I said, no.
He said,
but we saw it on the, you know, Drudge Report or something. And I, Breitbart. Or something. I said, yeah, I don't think so. And they said, but he saw it. I said, how do we know he saw it? And he said, well, because he's, I said, yeah, but don't you think Trump was standing in the room when he saw it, if he saw it? I don't think he saw it. I don't think he's traumatized. I don't think he thinks his dad got his head cut off. And if I go on and report that, then I'm just as bad as all the other fake news out there.
Right.
So I'm not going to do it. And they said, well, hey, we, you know, it's on Breitbart. And I said, I'll tell you what, go find another source. And if, and I don't want to be disrespectful, it's your radio station. If you can come up with enough sources, then I'll think about it, but go. And then they found something, another source, but that source picked it up from Breitbart.
Right. That's exactly what happened.
So they go, we got a second source. Right. I was like, no, you don't have a second source.
You're in an echo chamber.
Right. So, no, I'm not going to go up there and say that. And
they must have, was that the last guest host you did?
No, they like me.
Yeah.
And I think they think I'm fine. I was just like, I don't want to make everything about politics. I want to, and when I tell you what my feelings are on Kathy Griffin and what she did, and I share those feelings, I want you to believe those feelings. I don't want you to think, but yeah, this guy's coming from this side of the aisle or that side of the aisle. I just want you to know, whether you agree with my feelings or not, I want you to think that I think these are my feelings, because they are. And if I go and start reporting sort of erroneous things like this that are just going to end up sort of exacerbating things and throwing more gasoline on the fire, then when I render my verdict and my decision and my opinion, at some point you're going to go, but right.
That's exactly right. And it's a variation on the little boy who cried wolf.
It's going on more and more, and it's great for the newspapers now, but I really wonder how they're going to get back to where they were.
I always believe that the pendulum swings. At some point, something's going to happen, and it's going to go, it has to go in the other direction, because we're almost at the point of institutionalized insanity. And you know, it reminds me of when the hysteria people don't talk about anymore. I think his name was Richard Jewell, and Lynn Wood, my friend, represented him down in Georgia.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
Olympics in 96. Yeah. What was that?
And that was convicted, tried, convicted, and you name it. And then Ultimately, Lynn was able to show, you know, they'd gotten the wrong guy. And, you know, and that tended to kind of peel back stuff for a while.
So what are we going to, with all this, all these allegations going on and everybody jumping on the bandwagon, where's this going to end?
I think somebody, it's tough because litigation takes so long, but somebody will take a stand. And when they take the stand, they may prevail. You almost had a moment of it during the Roy Moore thing, because there were certain aspects of that, and we had discussed it, where it could have tipped the other direction, but it didn't. It didn't pan out. But there'll be a political situation, my guess is sometime getting closer to the elections next year, where one side or the other, and I'm not predicting whether it's Democrat or Republican, I'm just saying at some point somebody will get have a false accusation made, and there'll be some kind of demonstrable evidence that'll give people pause. Kind of like what we were talking about last week with Lainey Sweet and the murder of Daniel Shaver. I mean, until somebody actually sees it with their own eyes, it's unfortunate. You can talk about it and talk about it and talk about it, but there's going to be a situation where somebody realizes that we've gone too far.
Well, with like Roy Moore, and it's just going to go down in his wiki page, it was like, oh, pedophile? What was that guy? Was that the guy who managed the boy bands? And where was that guy from Subway? I can't remember which pedophile. Well, first things first. The stuff he did was all 40 years old, right?
Right.
Like, we don't have any in the last 40 years. And then number two, we got a definition that needs to be cleared up, which is the attempting to have sex with the prepubescent person is pedophilia, which is grotesque.
Beyond.
The part with the 16-year-old, 17-year-old, or even 14-year-old, the past puberty is something that's been going on for quite some time in this country and around the world.
My grandmother bore my father at the age of 14 in Chicago, Illinois.
So there you go.
That
case in point.
Yeah. I mean, so look.
Jerry Lee Lewis.
Right.
I mean, Elvis. I mean, what I mean?
I did a case 12 years ago that required us to find the age of consent back in the early 2000s. And shockingly enough, there were a number of states where the age of consent back then, 12, 13 years ago, there were a number of states that were 14 and 15 years old.
Yeah. So the thing about Roy Moore is you go, so you think he's a great guy? You think he's a good guy? You think he's a moral guy? It's like whatever. And it's like, no, I don't think any of those things. On the other hand, I don't think he's a pedophile. I'm going to draw, again, sort of our capital murder one versus manslaughter. You trying to get into the pants of a 16-year-old or high school student or even a 15 or 14-year-old versus I'm having sex with a 6-year-old.
It's not even in the same universe. And the other thing is, you can't articulate those kinds of thoughts in this environment, because people say, well, you're either with us or against us.
I think I just did.
Yeah.
No, you can't.
You just see. I mean, look, I'm no fan of virtually any position the guy takes. Some of his positions are just craziness to me. But at the same time, you can't, everything you've articulated, there has to be a nuanced explanation. 40 years ago, we didn't look at things the way we do today.
Right.
Period.
It's like trying to convince someone or convict someone for saying Negro when that's what people said.
Right.
Where he was at that time, a lot of people were engaged in that kind of behavior. There were songs about it, many songs in the 70s about that behavior.
I always felt like if you're gonna lambaste this guy as creepy, because you and I both know that this is not a guy you'd hang out with. Can you imagine?
No.
I mean, never in a million years are you going to hang out with Roy Moore. I mean, can you imagine what this guy was in high school? I can't even tell you. And what was creepy was not the 16, 17-year-olds or even the 14-year-old, although she was upset. And, you know, I know that that's one of the things now you have to say whether you believe the person. And, you know, I was in a mediation, by the way, 2 days ago in a state that will remain nameless. And in the mediation, three of the people were saying their piece. And then they brought me back in without those three people there. And the judge said to me, she goes, oh, they were so sincere. I said, Judge, let's just stop for a second. They weren't sincere. I could have clinically taken them apart in about 45 seconds, but I was deferring to you because you want to try to get this case settled. But let's not go into I believe them or they're sincere because they're talking about whether it was too noisy and they couldn't get their kids to bed at 8 o'clock on a school night when it was in the middle of the summer. So, you know, I mean, it's just stupid stuff that you're supposed to understand. But what was creepy about Roy Moore, I thought the creepiest was that the mall had guys.
That's what I said.
Right?
I said being banned from a mall, although I put it on my list. I want to have my hands registered in the county.
Yeah.
I'd like to be kicked out of a casino for winning.
Yeah.
Just too much winning. Exactly. And I'd like to be banned from a mall because I'm too sexy. And it proved to be a distraction at the food court.
But yeah, exactly. I didn't want to be banned from the mall for being that creepy guy who was trolling.
It's hard to defend banned from a mall.
I mean, that's where we've lost all semblance of reality. I mean, banned from the mall is, yeah, you're banned from the mall, but you're okay for the Senate. I mean, that should have been the bumper sticker.
I bet you we could get Rick Caruso on the blower and get him to ban you from the Galleria.
Yeah.
Oh, the Galleria. That's right. All right, let me tell you about Nightfall. History's new scripted drama series, Nightfall. Wednesday nights, 10 p.m., set medieval France, tangled in politics and conflict. One courageous Templar knight will lead his order of warrior monks on a life-or-death mission to find the lost Holy Grail. These history shows are fantastic. The casting is amazing. We got the guy Tom Cullen from Downton Abbey.
Right.
He leads the cast. The visuals are
amazing. You mentioned before the visuals, right?
It's amazing. You guys got to watch it. You can't believe – like stuff looked – if it was on TV, it looked hokey. And if it was in the movie theater and had a big fat budget, then it looked good.
I used
now
to watch
everything looks good.
Right. Everything looks good. This is not your father's Hardy Boys.
It's an hour-long feature film each week.
Yes. That's right. I told you that Tom Cullen was in this. But anyway, it takes the viewers deep inside the most powerful, mysterious military order of the Middle Ages. It's these guys are monks, man. They're monks, right? Yeah. He who controls the Grail holds the power. It's Nightfall. It's history. It's Wednesdays. It's 10 p.m. All right, let's bring it home and wishing everyone a happy holiday.
Merry Christmas.
And a great great new year and a Merry Christmas, yes.
I'll see you 2 days from now at the house. Break open this bottle of scotch. Have you walk home. People laugh, but that's we end the night usually.
Well, I Uber with one of your guests,
yes.
Which is I go, where are you going? And I go, that way. And I go, I live that way. And I guilt them. I go, don't go out of your way. Just drive me to you. Don't turn. But right. They have to drive you
home. But you have to drive up towards Foothills, so just right. Drop me off at Georgian.
I'll get that direction somewhere. Yeah, all right. So live basic cable commentary, that's coming up January 25th in Irvine. We got the cruise coming up. We got Corolla drinks. We got all the good stuff. So just go to adamcarolla.com and Chassis and see all the movies over at Chassis and all that stuff. Here's Gary.
You can probably also, if you search for basic cable commentary, you can probably find the Cobra that we did on the 2.0 cruise available for sale now. And for the 3.0 cruise, CorollaFanCruise.com. It's going astonishingly fast.
Yes, and thank you. And yes, the one we did live on the cruise was very well received. People loved it. So you can check it out. And Mark.
Well, we've got Dawson on Mistrial, the audiobook. Download that. It's a great gift for Christmas, especially if you've got a first-year law student or some aspiring law student. Mediterranean Tapas at 10E downtown. Prova Pizza in Grand Central Station in New York. And Casa Tropicana. What a great place to go between Christmas and New Year's down in San Clemente.
So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Mark Garriga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.